You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Modgepodge.
Hodgepodge?
Hodgepodge.
Modgepodge.
Yeah, there's a Modgepodge. Whole Modgepodge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modgepodge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental here on MLSsoccer.com and Sirius XMFC Channel 85. David Goss sitting in Andrew Wiebe's seat. It's taller than I am, so it's comfortable, but my feet don't touch the ground. Ben Bear alongside me and Matt Doyle in the studio. I'm not going to say what color the wall is because it annoys me every time Andrew does it. So everyone can just guess. It can be whatever color you want it to be.
Let the people, you know, use their imaginations a bit. Extra Time Radio driven by David Goss today.
Wow.
That is exciting because this is going to go off the road, I think.
When you have Continental on your tires, anyone can get behind the wheel. That's how I've always felt. We're about to find out. We're about to find out because I live in New York City. I don't drive very often. But I did learn how to drive stick shift recently. So
really?
I can do it anywhere.
40-year-old man, and I've never learned how to do that.
A lot younger than that, and I haven't learned to do that either.
Well, you guys should try. It's really fun. Yeah. Now I can drive things like manual cars.
Like
cars with
like
a stick shift.
I've actually driven a tractor in my life already.
Uh-huh.
But it was...
Let's cross that one off the bucket list. I mean,
it was one of those moments where you look around and you say, I can't believe I'm here.
We all know Wiebe's driven a tractor.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's probably driving a tractor literally right now.
That's how he commutes. But
as we're recording this.
I'm really excited, though, because Wiebe's away, which means Ben's here and his levels go out of control and it's impossible to control. So I'm really excited for the complaints about that. And I'm really excited about the show. Gold Cup is here. We had 3 full game days, so we've seen everyone play. We're going to talk a ton about that. Canada and Costa Rica are going to get us restarted Tuesday night, 7:30 p.m. Eastern on Fox Sports, Unimas, and TSN up in Canada, and we'll be back on Club and Country after the whistle, all 3 of us, on Wednesday after the U.S. game, which is a 9 p.m. game.
Are we going to give Ben any FaceTime this time?
But he'll be there.
He'll be there.
So I want people to know emotionally that he's there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, send in your tweets.
Yeah.
I mean, people are calling out. I know that's happening.
Ooh. We need Ben's fan base to advocate for him.
What is the Bear Hive called? Like, what's your
Well,
fan
it's
group?
Really called the Bear Den, you know, but like Doyle kind of stole my whole like marketing scheme here.
Because the
analyst den. So I can't do the Bear Den.
I called it the Bear's Lair when I walked to it the other
that
day.
That is true. He did do that.
Yeah.
I was standing very close. I was sitting very close to them while they were, him and Ziggy were going through the U.S. lineup, just
were
so you know.
Were you still in hibernation? Were you asleep throughout the entire segment?
No, I mean.
I kind of was. And everybody in the sound room was like shouting at me and I couldn't figure out what was going on.
I'll take hotline, 401-206-0MLS. Call it during the game on Wednesday or after the game. We'll take you. USA takes, Canada takes.
Martinique takes.
And
Martinique
I will put takes. Them on the show personally. So
also, Martinique, if they score a goal, every time a player scores a goal, Ziggy Schmidt gets a little cut because he's the Martinique whisperer.
Yeah.
The guy has every good player
also,
for Martinique ever.
Anything to curry favor to me on the Hot Take Online, we'll get on the show.
Okay. Well, that's good to know for all the fans. We're going to talk U.S. Open Cup and MLS transfers coming up in the second segment because the transfer window is open, which means it's silly season and we're all having the best time ever debating GAM and TAM for an hour and a half to 2 hours here in the office. But let's get it started with the U.S. national team. 1-1 against Panama. So it was the toughest game in the group. We knew that coming in. It's obviously a new group that hasn't played together very often, but they looked good against Ghana just a few days earlier. What's your initial takeaway?
My initial takeaway is that ultimately this game doesn't matter that much because they're going to get out of the group. I mean, it matters if you finish first or second, I guess, but ultimately it's kind of doesn't matter. Obviously, I was not impressed with anything that went on the field. And it just wasn't good. I mean, you can look at the expected goals that Paul Carr put out, or you could, you know, talk about all the people that are coming at the U.S. soccer media for not calling out Bruce Arena like we used to do for Jurgen Klinsmann.
Jurgen got an 18-month grace period.
Yeah, also, yeah, that's true.
Bruce.
But, I mean, there were some people on Saturday night that were that were calling us out for not going harder at Bruce.
Look,
including someone who was sitting at the table with us.
I think we all said Bruce picked the wrong lineup. He was too conservative with who he chose to be on the wings in terms of, like, I like Alejandro Bedoya. I think he's a number eight at this point. I think he figures into that mix with, like, Kellen Acosta and Jermaine Jones, I guess, if Jermaine Jones gets back. You need a more attacking player at that wing spot, especially because the guy who was supposed to play as a number 10, Joe Corona, did not show up. He was not influential at all, and that kind of left Dom Dwyer on an island. Kellen Rowe did much better on the left wing, but I think I agree with Ziggy. I wanted to see him underneath. I wanted to see him in the middle of that three line in the 4-2-3-1. I want to get back to the expected goals thing, and you're right. Like, Panama did outplay us. Panama could have deserved to win 2-1 in this game, but this is a good example of how expected goals are not necessarily additive. Because if you look at their two big flurries, their four best chances, two of them came off of rebounds.
Right, so it would have been one goal.
Right, yeah. Right. So
it would have been four goals.
I mean, there was also that one
Diaz
miss. The Diaz miss is probably 0.85.
Yeah. And I like that, by the way.
But that should have been a goal. We should have lost
2-1. Yeah, and that came right after another really good chance, probably like a 0.45. Yeah. So anyway, stats tell the truth, but it's not always 100% clear truth. But I do agree. I mean, overall, Panama was a better team.
Okay, so a lot of things to talk about. One of the things that we hadn't talked about yet that was interesting to me was just how hesitant Bruce was to change things.
I'm not sure I agreed with that.
You didn't think after that first half that there'd be a halftime sub?
No, I didn't. I really didn't.
He's just going to let these guys show themselves?
Yeah, going to let them show themselves. And, that's part of winning the job. Or losing it. And by the hour mark, he said, okay, enough's enough. Time to make some changes. And the guys he brought in, Juan Agudelo in particular, I thought played a little bit better than the guys they replaced. I don't know how Agudelo is really going to fit because he was
in this team or in the whole team?
In this team. Because I think in the whole team, he's got to be the backup. No, I mean, he's competing with Dom Dwyer.
Well, the question is, are you talking about the whole team? There was a lot of discussion about who the number three U.S. national team striker is right now.
Yeah. I mean, I like Agudelo better than Dwyer, but clearly Dom Dwyer scored a goal a game. He's got a good claim on that.
I think a lot of people thought that Morris was the number three, and then Dwyer and Agudelo kind of battling for the number four.
But Morris not fully healthy right now.
But, I mean, he's been playing for how many games has it been since he got injured?
Yeah.
So, like, how many games do you give him to get back to that form that he showed at the end of 2016? I mean, he has a hole of the year before the World Cup. But, like, at what point? So, do we drop him down with everyone else?
Yeah.
I guess.
I mean, you can't give a guy off 1 year of professional soccer a guaranteed spot, right?
Right, of course.
And no one has a guaranteed spot. I think one of the things interesting is Dwyer and Agudelo bring such different things. I think Agudelo is a better like-for-like replacement if a guy like Josie goes down in the first 22 minutes of a World Cup game because it's really hot in the World Cup. But I think Dom Dwyer is
a guy I'd
like to see off the bench because I think what he brings...
Just in terms of his energy and grit?
I mean...
And CONCACAF-iness?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
all of that.
We didn't have a guy like Dwyer at the 2014 World Cup. If we did, then he would have been the guy who was starting once Josie went down.
Yeah. I agree with Ben.
I understand what you're saying. Like, Agudelo and Josie are a little bit closer. But I think they all put the same position.
Yeah.
As opposed to all the guys we had.
Right. It's not Aaron Johansson.
Yeah, it's not Aaron
Johansson. Right. Like someone who just needs to flow and be.
Or Clint. I guess, I forgot. Like Clint's, I guess, the nominal number three striker. But he's basically.
To me, he should never. We have so much depth now. He should never have to play as a number nine.
But he's on the roster.
Yeah. To me, Clint's the one guy who's like, I don't care if he hasn't scored in 15 games.
Yeah.
I want him on the roster for the World Cup. Like, unless it's really, really the end and, like, there's no disputing it, I want Clint Dempsey on that roster for the World Cup.
So one of the guys we think is on his way towards Russia is Dax.
Yeah.
And he was captain. And in the first 35 minutes, my first thought process was...
Bedoya was captain.
Oh, Bedoya was captain. Yes. Thank you. Was this guy's, like, a pit bull, and he was getting around the field, and he was so active. And then you felt like he was a little too active.
No, I think the first 30, 35 minutes, really the first like 55, 60 minutes, nah, maybe not 60, but the first like 50 minutes, we'll say, he was good. But then as the game started to get away from the U.S. a little bit, he did what I think he has a tendency to do for his club teams as well. He started pushing it too much. He started to be too complicated on the ball, and you saw him get caught on the ball a couple times, which is something that he always didn't do. And of course, at the same time, he was not getting any help from Kellen Acosta. You think about how the U.S. Against Ghana, how they were able to just control the entire rhythm of the game and where it was played. And granted, the Ghana B team is not as good as the Panamanian A team.
Abu Mohammed in central midfield. Yeah, that's always a good matchup.
So I think it was like, as always with these games that where things go bad, it's like a cascade of things. Like one thing kind of breaks and then the next thing kind of breaks and they're not afraid of us running in behind them, so suddenly they're compressing the spaces a little bit more, so when Dwyer checks back, he has more guys around him, it's tougher to play at defeat, and so it's one thing after another, and they didn't cope well. I think that's when Arena started making the subs that he made. But if you look at this team, it's exactly, the issues are what we thought they would be. We don't have any speed on the wings. We like Kakuta Mane, his nosedive this year, I think obviously hurt his chances, but it lowered the U.S. national team's ceiling, because a winger like that would be perfect. Ethan Finlay would be perfect, even though you could argue he's just not as good an all-around soccer player as like a Bedoya or a Corona. He fits a need more snugly.
He's been bad the whole 12 months, 18 months almost.
Something's going wrong in Columbus.
Even Zardes' athleticism could break that game.
Like Zardes is the same as Nagbe, though. They don't make those really aggressive, direct runs.
I would expect against Martinique and Nicaragua, we're going to see a lot more of an attacking lineup. I think we'll see two forwards. Mm-hmm. We'll see Zardes on the wing at least. And
I want to see Agudelo and Morris up top.
Yeah, I mean,
kind
I think
of like
that's
4-4-2.
Well, do you think we could see Zardes and Morris on the wings and Agudelo start all four forwards at the same time?
Well, I would assume Areola is going to get a shot. I mean,
he started
in Mexico City.
The fact that he didn't play
means
either he's really got his spot totally locked up and right. Bruce wanted to see somebody else there, or it means that he's like got a tiny little injury and Bruce just didn't want to use him in this first game and would rather let him through, because it was bizarre not to see him on the field.
And you knew it was going to be the toughest game, so you knew you were going to – you would use him there if you're thinking, we don't want to overuse him for club play. This is where you'd use him rather than against Martinique and against Nicaragua.
As Alexi said after the game, like, this was the one chance to evaluate some players, but we probably can't really evaluate any of these players until, like, the semis now probably. Because Martinique and Nicaragua, you know, they have some athletes, they have some players who can play a little bit, but they're not – you would expect the U.S. to win these games by multiple goals.
And they will play on Wednesday night in Tampa Bay, 9 p.m. Eastern time. That one on Fox Sports 1, TSN up in Canada, and Unimas. And then we'll be back with Club and Country after the whistle. That one on YouTube, Facebook, MLSsoccer.com. You can go anywhere you want to find it. Give us a call, 401-206-0MLS, and we'll get you on the show. You can complain. You can compliment things. You can do whatever it is you want.
Keep it under 30 seconds.
There you go.
Keep it.
Have your timer out.
Gasman, I feel like your energy is low. Are you just like
– Bruce Arena was coaching me this week.
Whoa.
That team came out flat.
I agree.
And when – okay, those first two friendlies in January were flat games. That's fine. Since then, they've been fun to watch. They've been exciting. They've not always done their job perfectly, but it's like, oh, this is back.
Yeah.
And this was a step back. Yeah. Whether or not it's your first team, the environment of what you're watching was a step back.
Right.
And Ghana wasn't.
But wait a minute. Weren't they also kind of flat and kind of bad against Panama in World Cup qualifying as well?
But you're on the road in CONCACAF. You got the job done. You got a result on the road. That was all you were looking for.
Right.
So
also, let's remember 2013 Gold Cup dominated every game.
Yeah. Because Landon Donovan played. That guy's the best. That guy's so good at soccer. And now he gets to sit on TV and talk about it. Let's not forget, though, Friday night, the Canadian national team, the drought is over. They finally scored a goal in Gold Cup play. They finally got a win in Gold Cup play. They made a strong attempt at the end to not get a win in Gold Cup play, but they ended up coming away 4-2. Alphonso Davies with two goals. Scott Arfield with a goal. Mm-hmm. I sat next to Ziggy Schmidt during this one, and he brought my hopes down continuously throughout the game. He was less impressed than I was. What did you take away from it?
All right. Justin Glad and Eric Palmer Brown and a defensive midfielder to be named later to Canada for Alphonso Davies. Who says no?
I'm a big Justin Glad fan. So
I'm
you better watch
Justin
out.
Glad fan, too. Alphonso Davies is the freaking truth.
Yeah.
I mean, we do have a lot of center back depth right now.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
That a way to control your cap space well there, Doyle. That's smart. It's not an asset-driven league right now. He ran by a full international right back.
Yeah.
Just like ball bounces, right back thinks he's got it played. I don't remember the name. And Alphonso Davies just blows right by him.
Yeah.
But then takes it to the end line and cuts his own angle off and doesn't get it to anyone.
So he's like, because he's like 12.
Yeah.
He's out there doing this against grown men. Canada doesn't have enough defense, especially speed and defense, to be really dangerous in this tournament, I don't think. But you're looking at the young talent that they have in midfield and attack, there's a lot of fun to be had over the next 10, 12 years with this group of Canadians. And it was fun to see them break their duck in emphatic fashion.
And Doyle has them winning Gold Cup, so well, that's not a troll move at all.
They have to get by
Michael Burris. Shout out to Squizzato.
Gavin Wiggins wants to know, what do you take away from what can he take away? What can he make of Friday's game?
I mean, they played well against an inferior opponent.
Interesting. Ben Baer doesn't mince
words. But
they
don't always. They don't always do that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. But like, so they did it.
Yeah.
Now let's see.
If Jay Chapman had been there, they'd have scored seven.
Oh, Tuesday night's game is the game that you really can see where this team is at.
Patrice Bernier comes out. Boron gets injured.
They completely fall apart.
And they fell apart. They gave up two goals in about 5 minutes to go from 3-0 to 3-2. And then they ended up, Davies got another one to make it 4-2. Zambrano's not joked around in saying that Bernier is the most important player on the team. He has to be on the field. But he can't always be on the field, and he won't always be on the field. Is there anyone that you see in the pool that can step into that role? Tiber brought energy, but he doesn't control the game.
Yeah, Tiber's development in that regard has been a little bit disappointing, because when we saw him at 18, 19, 20 years old, you thought, okay, this is a guy who's going to be able to sort of put his foot on the ball and spread it out, but he just doesn't seem to have that instinct or seem to have had it developed. Osorio doesn't do that. Osorio is like a small-sided game player. Chapman, who's not even on the 40-man roster, is more of just a pure 10. I don't see a Patrice Bernier for Canada coming through the ranks, and that does concern me more than maybe any other thing. But then again, I'm not out there watching, you know, the Montreal Academy teams or the TFC Academy teams every
David
week.
Bellan Goyet.
Yes.
Goyet.
He's injured.
He's
David Chaunier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
J.S. Bernaval on Twitter says, can you provide any valuable help in signing Balu to Canadian men's national team?
Oof.
It's another one of the hype kids that was. He's not on this team.
I mean, if you have some allocation money in your
he can go into the trade maybe and end up with the U.S. Imagine if he's on the other wing.
Right.
Yeah. Davies, Balu, Laren, hopefully once you get to the next round. Right. I mean, that's the type of thing that could drive people nuts. Although Junior Hollett was really good, in my opinion,
on
one of the wings.
And they have, like I said, they have a ton of attacking, a ton of midfield and attacking talent. It's just coalesced in like two or three different spots. And figuring out how to manage that and get the best out of the entire roster in spite of that is going to be, I think, Octavio Zambrano's biggest challenge.
As everyone expected, Martinique leads their group, Canada leads their group, and Mexico in first in their group. I think that's what everyone had, right, going into this tournament?
That's what I had.
Yeah, of course. So you had Costa Rica knocked off Honduras right after Canada at Red Bull Arena. A 1-0 game there, two MLSers, Rodney Wallace and Marco Ureña linking up. I was pretty excited about that game. That was like my exact perfect place in the world, and I just want to live in that game at all times. Martinique beat Nicaragua. Curacao.
An insane game.
Guys
flying
that
around, kicking the ball, don't know where it's going.
That was
crashing
about
into
eight
each
and
other.
A half out of 10 on the CONCACAF scale, I think.
It didn't slow down, by the way. Curacao, Jamaica, 2-0 to Jamaica. Not a lot of people know what to make of Curacao yet.
Two goals from MLS players.
Right. Then El Salvador, Mexico was like CONCACAF. It was just like, does anyone want to know what CONCACAF's like? Let's just go watch this. Because it was just like insanity, clearances off the lines. No one was defending at any point in this game. Goalkeeper substitution.
I mean,
Mexico looked shaky, talented but shaky.
I mean, I was thinking about this before the game. I was like, I'm just not like excited. I'm usually very like excited to watch the Mexican national team. I'm just not for this team. This team has a lot of players who are like pretty good in Liga MX, but no, like none of them really stars even in Liga MX, let alone, you know, they're just not like that. Elias Hernandez is, has been really solid for a number of years. But for example, he was on Tigres and they felt he wasn't good enough to stay there, so they shipped him out. He wasn't good enough to be on the best team anymore. So he's on Leon now. I mean, Pizarro, he didn't really do anything in that game. They don't have a forward unless you – I mean, Kubo, we assume is going to be ready for the next game. Otherwise, they don't have a real forward in that team. Hugo Ayala has to hold it on the back. The rest of those guys are real young, no experience. I think their strongest point is the center midfield with Dueñas and with Molina when he came on. But, I mean, I'm just – this is not a team I'm really excited for. I mean, I think they're one of the three best teams. But to me, as I said before the tournament, Costa Rica's a favorite here.
Yeah. I think Costa Rica, Honduras lost 1-0, but they had opportunities. I think both those teams, if they get out of the group, are teams that can threaten everyone else at this tournament right now. And that makes it fun because it means that there's a lot up for stakes. And it also, I think, in this situation of how does a U.S. national team player prove themselves, you're not going into a game where you're favorites. And so every little difference, if you play a Costa Rica, if you play a Honduras in the next round, you look at, okay, where are our advantages? That's guys that performed well, right? Yeah. And that's specific spots. And we're expecting to see a host of changes for Bruce against Martinique.
Yeah, the big one I want to see is Matt Hedges at center back, specifically for Matt Beisler. We know what Matt Beisler can do. He's had about 50 caps now. And we know that Beisler and Omar Gonzalez do not work well together. And it's for the exact reasons that Landon Donovan and Stu Holden, who I thought did a good job on color commentary, the exact reasons that they sort of elucidated during the game. Both guys are more comfortable dropping off. And that created this huge pocket of space between central defense and central midfield. I think with Hedges in there, it stays tighter. It stays a little more compact. It becomes more difficult to play through the lines. He is, by most everybody's account, the most vocal and quick on his feet as sort of backline organizer and very commanding in the way he sort of arrays the people around him. And the U.S. need that because the only guy who really seems to do that in the U.S. national team player pool is Jeff Cameron. And Jeff Cameron's, what, 32? You know, and he's not Benjamin Button. He's not going to start aging backwards here. So it's – I think this is it's a crucial thing. And it's not something that I think people get because they look and they say, oh, well, Omar plays for Pachuca. They're a really good team. He's got a lot of experience. John Brooks, you know, just moved for $20 million. He's a really good player, hugely talented, you know, a lot of experience. And Matt Beisler, all three of those guys play really well with Jeff Cameron. All three of those guys struggle badly when Jeff Cameron's not out there with them. We need to find a backup Jeff Cameron. I think that's becoming a crucial issue for the next 12 months.
And for this team, I think Viafania and Moro, both of them can be huge attacking options off. Mm-hmm. But they need to know what's going on next to them to have that support. We will talk about all of this, of course, on Club and Country After the Whistle on Wednesday. And we are going to talk some transfer window rumors and some U.S. Open Cup coming up in the next segment on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
David Goss, Matt Doyle, and Ben Baer back here on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental and MLSsoccer.com and Sirius XM FC Channel 85. Let's look towards Major League Soccer because there's never a break. Even when there's a break, there's no break. U.S. Open Cup this week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, all have quarterfinals. It all gets started on July 10th with San Jose Earthquakes, LA Galaxy, Cali Classico at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Then on Tuesday, July 11th, Sporting KC FC Dallas at 8:30 p.m. Miami FC, FC Cincinnati, the last two lower division teams remaining, will play on Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. And then New England Revolution hosting New York Red Bulls at Jordan Field in Boston at 7:30 p.m. on Thursday. You guys, which matchup, which game are we most looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to I'm just a classic East Coast homer, obviously. So I'm looking forward to the Revs Red Bulls on Thursday. If you anybody who's talked to Jesse Marsh for 10 minutes knows how much he loves the Open Cup and how much it means to him. You know he wants to win this. They're not missing maybe a couple players. They're missing Mourinho, and I think that's it. So they're gonna have a basically full
Mourinho
full starting 11.
I was like, is Jose Mourinho playing?
Yeah, right. Jose, yeah. So I expect you're gonna see BWP, Kleshin, all those dudes, and then the Revs have been a major disappointment. They've gotten kind of unlucky throughout the course of the year, and they went to the final last year. I think they're gonna want to get back. They're gonna want to salvage something out of the season.
Right.
So they're gonna go all out too.
Yeah, and this game is in Harvard.
This game's at Harvard.
Yeah,
yes.
Which is a fun little stadium. Harvard. Yeah. You hate that stadium, right, Northeastern?
No, it's fine. It's fine. A small little college soccer stadium that means nothing to us. Genuinely. I think my school's better than them at soccer. Anyway, and then the game you're looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to all four of them equally. Yes. There are reasons. Cali Classico is going to be great. That one's tonight, Monday night. Then there's, Sporting hosting FC Dallas. Which
is just like environment-wise, like Sporting KC hates FC Dallas.
Right. That one's going to be pretty intense, and you're going to see a ton of the kids for FC Dallas, which I think everybody wants every time. Yeah, the Paxton Pomykal hype train. And then we get Poku. Poku versus the legend, Mitch Hildebrand. I mean, come on. I'll be watching that one. I assume everybody will be watching that one.
You watch every game.
That's true. I don't really have much
of a life. I'll be watching that one. Of course we're watching that one.
While we're also watching the U.S. National Team in Gold Cup at the same time.
Oh, that's right.
What a delicious amount of soccer to pour down our gullets and enjoy. Yeah, of course. Let's talk MLS transfer. Transfer window is officially open, which means we can make up anything we want, and everyone else is doing the same as well. And then... For a little while, there's a potential
that's
that
good journalism, David.
There's a little while where there's a potential that it could be true until it's not true at some point. Let's start with Seattle. They've already made one signing, Kelvin Leerdam, out of the Eredivisie. He's a right back, which is clearly a position of need right now because Christian Roldan's played there more than he should probably
Gustav
ever Svensson's play there.
Played there. Brad Evans can't stay on the pitch.
O'Neill Fisher
can't stay on the pitch. it's been a house of horrors back there for Seattle so far. So it makes sense that they went out and they got this guy in his prime. It's a little weird to see a TAM level right back, but then we heard Christian Dyer's report that Seattle has something like $900,000 worth of allocation money, and we all suspect that there's more TAM or GAM or something else coming, if not this transfer window, then in winter. So you could spend a little bit more, I think, on positions that don't traditionally have those big
players. Also, if you're a team that got rolled on in the draft, then you have the flexibility to spend on a different position.
For sure.
Which is the point of why you do that. There's rumors of Roman Torres.
Yeah, we've all seen that, right? That Roman Torres is maybe not so happy and wants to go back to Colombia.
I can't imagine him not being happy.
He seems pretty happy, but he looks like he's been celebrating. So it's,
That's a little confusing. I don't know. I still expect him to be here for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Though I do think Seattle will try to add like a young athletic center back, which is clearly a need for them because Torres and Marshall combined are age 65 or something like that. But the big thing, Derlis Gonzalez, yes or no?
Would I take him or do I think he's coming?
Do you think he's coming?
I think there's a really good chance he's coming.
Yeah.
I think if you look that Nelson Valdez is already here, so like you have a connection and you look at the age level and quality of player that Seattle's brought in the past, he fits all of that. So it's not odd to think that he could come.
How do you fit all those guys?
I think you're still looking for a center forward, right?
I think if you bring in Derlis Gonzalez with that third DP slot, then you're saying that Jordan Morris is a center forward from here on out.
You think Jordan Morris plays there?
Yeah, that's what I would think.
And Gonzalez goes out on that left wing?
Oh, yeah.
Wing,
and
Dempsey and Lodeiro.
Yes.
Yikes, that team's going to be filled.
Yeah, that team should score some goals. But, like, I want to see...
Theoretically.
I want to see Jordan Morris be more active and aggressive in his runs. Like, he's got to just watch some film of my man Joseph Martinez because, like, that's the type of stuff. You can split those defenders every time. Just make them terrified of your speed and quickness. And he's not doing it this year no matter where he's lining up for Seattle.
Let's stay on the West Coast. LA Galaxy, they're always in transfer rumors. it's not like as bright as it's been in the past, where it's like the Galaxy could sign any of these players. It's like the Galaxy needs to sign someone right now.
Yeah,
it seems like
we all saw the Gignac rumors. I didn't believe them. Doesn't look like it. I mean, I don't think there's any. It's not gonna happen. That would have been really awesome.
I don't think it's gonna happen. I think there was something to it. I think there was something.
Whoa.
To
it.
Yeah.
But the $25 million.
Yeah.
Well, well, supposedly they agreed on personal terms, which I don't know if that's true, but.
Yeah. I think they were definitely kicking the tires on that. I think
so. Is center forward? So Alex Mejia on Twitter. Where should the Galaxy focus?
It seems like center forward. Like, I'm gonna make this point. Everybody hates Jossie Zardes, but the 1 year he actually got to play as a center forward, he scored what, 17 goals, and they won a title. And granted, MLS is better now than it was in 2014, but I still think that's probably his best position.
Well, the question is, I mean, he did that with another forward next to him.
Yeah, well, that's what Gio Dos Santos is. Gio Dos Santos is not a central midfielder.
So then
he's a second forward in the way that Robbie Keane was a second forward.
So then who would you sign if you're the Galaxy?
I mean,
what position?
I'm not sure. I mean, I would actually consider center back. I would actually consider going for a young, you know, high upside. You know, I don't have a name picked
that's
out.
That's very Greg Berhalter.
Or throw $100 million at Chicharito.
Yes, I think that's what's going to happen. I mean,
this is what we talk about.
Ben and I constantly talk about this because you know LAFC are coming in next year with so much juice.
Yeah.
And that has to scare the Galaxy a little bit. And if you have Chicharito out there scoring a goal a game with Gio Dos Santos, he's the most popular player in North American soccer history. He is.
Doubt about that.
I think to the Galaxy, it would be absolutely worth it.
Jonathan Dos Santos was a rumor. I think they waited too long on this one. He's played too well. Now it sounds like Club America, if he does come back this side of the world, is going to throw a bunch of money at him. Maybe. I think he would have been a huge help for them. Mm-hmm. And he's also a pretty big popular Mexican national team player. He also has a brother that plays on the team. I don't know if you guys have heard of that. What?
Like John Rooney?
His name's Jose Villarreal. Yeah, exactly.
Like D-Gal?
Yeah, exactly. New York Red Bulls is the other big one we're getting. I could read all of the tweets asking what the Red Bulls will do, or I can just ask you what are the Red Bulls going to do.
We know they're going to sign a center back. This is what has been going on for 2 months now. IS Jesse, Christian Dyer has been talking, has had reports out there. They're going to sign a center back, and they're going to probably sign a winger, is what I'm thinking.
You think it's going to be a winger? You think it's going to be like a second forward? A guy who could really play that spot so that they can go to the 4-2-2-2?
I think he's, I mean.
Basically what Veron was supposed to be.
Yeah.
I think he's seen, like, it's not, it hasn't worked. I mean, I understand, like, you didn't have the players that maybe he needed. Mm-hmm. But, like, there's been zero inkling that that will ever work.
Right.
They've been terrible. Every single time they've tried it, it's failed miserably.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, even if you get, like, a much better player, so what, you're going to get up to, like, failed, just not fail miserably? Like,
right.
I think you need to get somebody who can threat on the wings. Like Mwiel and Royer just don't do it.
They're useful, but like if you're going to play one of those guys, you have to balance them with somebody who offers a little bit of speed and penetration off the ball and who can finish plays. I mean, Royer and Mwiel they're not goal scorers. Grella was, but Grella's over 30 and he's out for the season until 2018. So
Alex J on Twitter is asking, do you find a replacement for Dax, a deep-lying passer, or is Tyler locked in there?
Yeah, they made that move for a reason, and they knew they were going to take some lumps. But I think both Tyler Adams and Sean Davis have improved over the course of the season. I think that is not something that they should worry about too much. The big thing to me is Aurelien Collomb. They were a disaster last year before he arrived. When he plays this year, they're 3-2-0 with a positive goal differential, like a +4 goal differential. When he doesn't play, they're like 5-10-2 with like a -15 goal differential. It's pretty horrible. I have it in my column, Ben. If you want to just scroll down to that.
I was just pulling it up. Sorry,
pulling up the numbers. All right, here it is.
This is
3-2-0 with 6 goals scored and 3 conceded when he plays, and they've posted 3 of their 5 shutouts. Or when he plays 90. In the 13 games this year, he hasn't played 90. They're 5-6-2 with 14 goals scored and 22 conceded. They're a different team without Aurelien Collomb. They have to find someone he's again, he's over 30. He's clearly injury prone at this point in his career, and they have been a disaster without him.
Guys,
just adding on top of that, when he's on the field, they concede 0.7 goals per 90. When he's off the field, they concede 1.6.
Okay, yeah. So now that you guys have both read articles to people, which is a groundbreaking form of entertainment, which I'm surprised no one else ever thought of, let's talk about a little bit of Flash, Juan Quintero. Young Colombian player struggles to get playing time at Porto. He's been on loan already. The rumor was he was coming to Orlando, and then Taylor Twellman tweeted out that he's going to Chicago.
Porto paid $5 million for him, and he doesn't play basically for 2 years, and they're going to sell him for $10 million?
That's the way it works.
Chicago's not paying $10 million.
I don't think Orlando City should.
No one's paying $10 million for him.
Okay, so let me start here. Why for Chicago? They're the best team in the league right now. They've already made a lot of additions this season. Nikolic has worked. Schweinsteiger has worked.
So even though they have enough TAM and GAM to pay down Akam and create another DP slot, your stance is if it's not broke, don't
fix
it.
Okay, so I'm in love with Juan Quintero. If it broke that team, I would still make that move to watch him play. He's one of those players for me, but I don't think he's a winger, and so I don't know that he fits.
He's number 10.
Yeah, so then
– You put – DeLu on the bench.
Okay, so then who's playing on the right wing?
Solignac.
Okay, and then you're sitting Juninho, and you're playing the team.
You're
the
sitting
way it
Juninho
is.
And DeLu, I think, are both 10 players, right?
Yeah.
So you have 2 10 players on the bench.
Yeah.
I mean, they can do that. They've been hoarding.
Yeah, but how long? You can't do that. They're gonna have to get rid. I mean, I guess they'll get rid of one or both of them.
And something tells me they'll have offers for Juninho in the offseason. Plus, he's on loan anyway.
Which is one of the questions we got on Twitter. Is there a chance that Juninho moves inside the league? Is there a chance Kai Kamara moves inside the league? We'll get that in a second.
Okay.
On Quintero, would you make that move if you're either of these teams? Let's take away the transfer fee and the amount of money. Would you bring this guy into your team?
He's a talent, but he worries me with his everything that you've seen about his work ethic on the field and everything you've heard about his work ethic off the field. He worries me. I would struggle to make that move despite how talented he is, especially for Chicago, who don't need it.
Okay, so for Orlando, who started the year hot and it's come back down to earth, can this guy bring them goals, like similar to maybe what they were looking for with Luis Skill? I'm not quite sure. Is this guy an option that you can bring in that gets you more game probably than Kaká?
If Chris wants to play a diamond, I mean, I think this guy would fit perfectly. He's your classic number 10 who doesn't really fit in modern soccer kind of really anymore. And you can play Kaká and Larin up top, and then you bring Rivas as your first guy off the bench.
So you think it would?
I think it would work. I mean, yeah, I think it would work.
Okay.
In Orlando, not Chicago. I would not bring him into Chicago.
Would you make any big moves for Chicago? Or would you just try to?
Maybe a center back.
Yeah.
When I talked to Nelson Rodriguez like 2 months ago, he said maybe center back.
Yeah.
But other than that, no.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, as we just, Doyle mentioned this like half an hour ago, Jorge Bava, not a great signing, obviously. So, you know, Lampson's done okay. But, you know. Maybe goalkeeper.
I mean, if that team's good enough, I think you can win an MLS Cup with Lampson.
I mean, don't they have to slide Mitch Hildebrandt a contract after the USL season ends?
Him and Lampson are good buddies, so they can hang out together. The Kai Kamara trade, we got a few tweets about it. Is there any chance that he or one of these attacking pieces on the Revs moves inside the league?
I think there was this offseason. I don't know that there's a market for him anymore because he's, what, 33 now, 32 or 33, and he's lost a step and he hasn't really meshed well with those guys. And, you know, everybody knows that there's some potential for locker room stuff, maybe not working out perfectly. So I think that Mike Burns will be making calls and maybe taking some calls, but I have not heard that there's a great market for Kai out there.
The other guys, Yoram Ovsisian, there's been rumors that he might be on the move. LA Galaxy, we're hearing today that DC United's looking for a striker inside the league. They already got DeShawn Brown. Is there any chance that he makes – that you see anyone, any big trade in MLS?
If LA feel like they've been priced out of the guys that they were linked to, which is Gignac and Chicharito and Benedetto back in the wintertime, shoot on sight, Dario. Movsisian actually does make some sense for LA. Like, and I wrote this in my column. Like, he feels like a guy who's just in a needs a change of scenery type of situation. For whatever reason, it hasn't gelled in Utah this time through for him. And maybe just getting out of there and getting surrounded by, you know, better, more polished players at this point.
And his home, right?
He's from LA. So I can actually see that happening for LA, and I think it could actually end up being a really good move. But it's not flash. We think of the Galaxy, yeah. Not to sound too much like Alexi Lalas here, but when you talk about the Galaxy, you talk about small, or, you know, big-ass, big-C super club, you know? And trading for Yurimov Sisian within the league doesn't feel like that. But if that does happen, one place where I could see Kai Kamara maybe landing would be RSL.
Ah.
Because they don't have any other center forwards. They're using Luis Silva as kind of a false nine from time to time.
So a three-way trade, potentially.
I don't know if it would be a three-way trade.
Have
MLS
had one
a lot
of those?
Of, yeah, right? But it could be one trade that ends up facilitating.
Kevin Love is on the move.
I think if you're the Revs, you take whatever you whatever it is for Kai, you take it.
Is he the one? Or if someone comes in for... I mean, a Agudelo for a Fagundes
not Agudelo,
for a win.
No, none of those guys. Kai.
Yeah.
I mean, I've watched a lot of Revs games this year. You see it all. You see frustration.
Yeah.
You see Kai, the Rowe and Agudelo and Fagundes and Wynn are all like, I think they're like all the similar kind of brain, and they're all like thinking the same kind of runs, and they can all get the ball off their foot pretty easily. And then the ball goes to Kai. You saw it the last game. The ball went to Kai. Wynn is streaking down the right, and he can't get the ball out from under his foot. It would have been a goal. Wynn is yelling at him right after the play is over.
Yeah.
And that kind of, I mean, that was, I think it was maybe 2-2 at the time. They could, or they, I think they may have even been leading.
Yep,
and then they go on and lose that game.
Yeah.
Probably lost their chance at a playoff spot. I'm not going to say anything about any percentages.
That was really quick.
Yeah.
But, you know, just like that kind of stuff, you can, it just builds up. I mean, I've seen Kellen Rowe do it with Kai this year. I think you just take whatever you can get.
Another center forward out there, Kenwyn Jones, that Chris Ashley wants to know him or McCann. Or
that would actually be interesting for DC if they're looking for a forward from inside the league, because Kenwyn Jones is not on an outrageously expensive contract. It's not cheap, but it fits in DC's budget.
Also, he was signed before Tata.
Yeah,
and
right.
Clearly not a Tata player. Same thing with McCann.
Right.
Who's also a Tampa
and
player.
He is a Ben Olsen player in that Ben Olsen likes his center forward to be able to hold the ball up and bring the wingers into play and release them into space. And that's what Kenwyn Jones can and does do.
Work ethic might be a different thing about being a Ben Olsen player. Elicio Sandoval Jr., does Vaco arrival mark the start of San Jose Earthquakes run to MLS Cup? A la Sounders with Lodeiro last
Whoa.
Year.
That's
there
laughing?
It, hey.
Laughing?
San Jose's in a better place right now than the Sounders were last year.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's
I literally true. Look on MLSsoccer.com for this kind of information later today. Later
okay,
yeah.
But, I mean, that article says if you're in a playoff position right now, you're looking pretty good to make the playoffs.
Right.
And San Jose are.
Historically speaking, yeah, if you're in playoff position in mid-July, you're doing
only
all right.
Only two teams in points per game that weren't in playoff positioning became.
Last year?
The last 2 years.
Okay.
Seattle last year, obviously, and then the Revs in 2015.
Right. So
the other how many spots? Those were the teams that were already there.
Interesting.
So
interesting.
For San Jose, I think we've seen some interesting stuff in the three games now that Chris Leitch has coached, and that includes the first 30 minutes in Atlanta before Kofi Sarkodie got that red card, where I thought San Jose were going toe to toe with them. I thought they were playing really well, playing through the middle, and what was missing was. In all three games, even though they won two of them, that maybe little bit of final third quality, that final ball. Jameer Hyka hasn't really been able to do that consistently. Tommy Thompson isn't that type of chance creator. He's been doing good work from the flanks, but he's not a guy who's going to sit in the middle and sort of pull you apart. So they have to work harder to create those types of goals. And just like the Sounders did at this point last year, and then Lodeiro came in and was magical, I don't think that's Vaco's game. Vaco's more of a second forward.
Second,
you know, he's there. He's Chris Wondolowski's replacement. And you're going to start to see that, probably not this year, but in 2018, Wando's going to have to age into the sort of the role that Totti had for the last like 6 years for Roma.
Which is being a legend.
Correct.
last one, Christopher Nordstrom. who are the teams with capacity to add big players? What's their biggest holes? What's something that we have a team, a spot we haven't talked about yet? Is there any expectation or any idea maybe that a big move for a team, maybe not a big move in the world market conversation,
I mean,
could be happening? Also, Sam Nicholson, we forgot to mention, already signed with Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, just add him to the list of wingers on that team. I'm sure he'll be better than the other guys they signed previously. Hopefully for them.
Shim Kadri.
Oh, God.
I'd love to see a center back in Houston. That would be wonderful.
Well, I'd like to see them get their number 10 that they've been rumored with.
Well, yeah, but like, I think the defense is more of a problem, personally.
Agree.
If FC Dallas can somehow get rid of Christian Coleman and bring in somebody useful.
Oh, you're giving up on Christian Coleman already?
Yes. Someone tweeted and asked if FC Dallas would go get a forward.
I don't think Rudy is on my best 11 right now, but like, somebody else would be nice. Vancouver is in playoff positioning right now. I don't think they need any more wingers. I think they have like 13 of them. So maybe a number 10. I mean, Bolaños can kind of play that position. I mean, there's a bunch of
Jordy Reyna's only played.
All these teams that are not in the top six that like I laid out and Doyle laid out last week, they could all use one or two players.
Portland's already got a center back.
Yeah. So Chris Reifer up there is saying that there aren't going to be any more big moves for Portland this window.
All those teams I would love to see. One, two, three players.
Montreal. I think we got to see a pretty big signing in defense for Montreal. Probably a center back because it hasn't worked with the guys that they have. They have the worst per 90 goals against average in the East, and you don't make the playoffs with that. And obviously they have big questions at left back since Ambroise Iyongo went down for the season. So they're in trouble.
And do you expect anything in Sporting KC? They're up top, but it doesn't feel like fool's gold. It's the best defense.
No,
it's.
I mean, Sporting KC's defense is still really big. The splashiest thing I could see Sporting KC doing this window is re-signing Eric Palmer Brown, because I think right now people expect that he's in his last 6 months as a Sporting KC player. I would not be surprised if he signs a pre-contract with some European team this window, or if they really want him badly. If they, you know, pay what would be a nominal fee. But I would love to see them hold on to him and Peter Vermees say, okay, you know what, let's try a little 3-4-3. Let's go with Opara, Beisler, and Eric Palmer Brown on the back line and switch it up a little bit. Because
he's not going to do that.
He's got the best defense in the league.
He's played the same formation for 5 or 6 years. You have the best defense in the league. Sorry, 8 years, whatever, how long it's been. And the best defense in the league, and he's going to change? Yeah.
All right, so one more possibility then. What if Andrea Pirlo retires?
I'm sure if Patrick Vieira is in his ear, he's like, Andrea, you know, it'd be really good for the team if you would not play for us anymore.
Also, you could keep the name and just bring it in Iniesta, right?
That's what everyone wants to see.
You think that is the move they make if he retires?
I don't think they can pull it. I mean, it's too late. I think.
But how would he physically fit in that team?
I have no idea. I mean, you give him Herrera's position.
Isn't that the guy who like along
Herrera is really good, but Andres Iniesta.
Andres Iniesta is a little better than Yongo Herrera. I'm gonna put it out there. I don't know.
Herrera just won a U20 World Cup.
No,
Andres Iniesta has won a few trophies in his career.
What? Did they lose? They lost?
No, they lost. They lost to England. Anyways,
oh, good call. Yeah.
Your brain can't even register that England won something.
No.
Andres Iniesta has also won a few trophies in his career. I don't know if
he won a U20 World Cup, actually.
Have you seen him play soccer?
I only watch MLS, so I've never seen
him play to make sure.
I've never seen that team play. We're going to head to the mailbag.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com. Or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions. I want it that way.
Tell me why. Ain't nothing but a party. Tell me why. Ain't nothing but a mistake. Back now on Extra Time Radio. Ben Bear alongside two no ones. Hosting the mailbag here, SiriusXMFC and Channel 85 Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. You guys ready to talk? More national team, more MLS?
I will literally talk MLS and U.S. national team for hours upon hours.
You also left the volume on your email, so we appreciate that.
It's just a Toronto FC media advisory. Don't worry about it.
Are they bringing in Andrea Pirlo in a trade to put alongside Jovinka? Let's get to the mailbag. Don't forget 401-206-0MLS is the phone number for the Hot Take Hotline as well. You can use that on Wednesday after the U.S. national team game for Club and Country. After the whistle, we will all be on talking about the U.S. national team. Bobby Warshaw, who actually knows how to play soccer, will also come on and talk about that as
Allegedly.
Well. Allegedly. How many goals are you going to score tonight, Ben?
I'm scoring 4.
I want to say that the Analyst Den column, Nick, tomorrow about Ben's performance in Zone 14.
Wait, does Bobby Warshaw play on this scrub team?
We could try and get him for next week, but no, he's not played yet.
Okay.
But
and like Kalen Carr does it and Stephen Keel.
We got Kalen to come once, and it was a game where we were low on people, and he came and was like, I'm not. I played. He like after 10 minutes, he looked around and was like, I played in an MLS Cup. This isn't happening.
So what does it say about Greg Lawless that back when he was a younger man at the start of MLS Digital, he was happily going down there and clowning all the weekend duffers?
I mean, I've never seen a right back play a more educated ball than Greg Lawless out on that field.
He could hit a nice long ball.
It's a work
of art. Wait, Greg Lawless likes long balls?
It's a work of art.
I don't know.
Greg Lawless likes long balls.
I don't know that one.
It's a work of art and a work of beauty. Austin Gordon here, after a long stretch of time with the U.S. Women's team, have overperformed with worse players. Why have they underperformed with better players? I think this question is, for a stretch, the U.S. didn't have the talent, and he's talking about not in the last 6 months. I think he's talking about 1990 to 2002. And I think you've said recently that this is the deepest and most talented the U.S. has been. Are they underperforming now?
No. I thought they underperformed under Klinsmann, but they're unbeaten under Arena, and they took a point. I thought a well-earned point. They outplayed Mexico in Mexico. Soccer isn't just about talent. If it was, Mexico would beat us every time. It's about fit. It's about preparation. It's about understanding how to make the strengths of two players, and then those two players or two other players all resonate together and work together. And for the most part, the U.S. has had coaches who have been really good at that. And then once we started getting talented enough to make that really make a dent on the world stage, which was the summer of 2009, we lost two crucial pieces forever. Basically, in Iguchi and Yewu and Charlie Davies. And we didn't really recover from that over the next couple of years. And then once we started recovering from it, we had, as head coach, Jurgen Klinsmann, someone who has kind of a different philosophy of all of this.
Ben was waiting for you to get there. Although I was thinking about when we were talking the other night about the national team, about the program. Someone was asking about Sasha Kljestan and his fit. You remember Bradley, Marisa Due, Sasha Kljestan, Stuart Holden. There was 4 center mids that was the future of the U.S. national team. Benny Failhaber as well, coming out of the 2010 time period, of which only one ended up really playing after that.
Yeah. There was some bad luck. I mean, how much of a difference would a healthy Steve Zakuani made as a left winger for the last 5 years? Because he was on his way to getting citizenship, and I think he has gotten his citizenship now. And he was a dynamic, attacking, wide player who would have been, in my mind, second only to Landon Donovan in sort of those spots. And so a lot of things kind of broke bad for the U.S. pool. And in spite of that, we kept adding more creative pieces, better pieces at fullback, but we never got the sort of gestalt. We never made it all sort of work together.
So performing, underperforming, overperforming, there's no perfect way to judge it. A World Cup's a really tough one because it's so few games in such a short amount of time. But where the U.S. national team stands, talent-wise, team-wise, expectation, right? So 32 teams are going to the World Cup. If you think the U.S. is going, what would you want to see saying right now at the end on July 10th, 2018? What would you have liked to have seen?
Quarterfinals.
And doesn't matter how they do it?
No.
Okay.
I expect us to get out of the group. I'm not going to say I expect us to make it to the quarterfinals, because if we meet Argentina or Germany or Brazil, I don't expect us to win that game.
Well,
but I would expect
we're due for an easy, Group of death. Easy group. Group right. of death.
There's no
easy group. So let's get first in the group.
Okay, and, so you want a nice
yeah, easy, and then we'll so play like I don't know.
So you want to?
We'll probably play Ghana.
England in the round of 16.
We'll probably play Ghana.
Beat them because they're not.
Wait,
good.
You think England's gonna get out of the group?
Guys, it's a different England. It's a different world.
Wayne Rooney's still out here.
Tammy Abrams up top making things happen. Kevin Chan on Twitter. Is Josie still a lock starter for the full Nats or giving U.S. depth that forward? Do we now have situational starters depending on game and opponent?
I think it's a little more situational just because we all saw what Bobby Wood did in 2016. I thought he was probably the best other than Clint. He was probably the most reliable attacking player that we had, and he's a gamer. He has all that sort of thing, the things that you kind of look for in that position. So there are times where you play him together. There are times you go for one, times you go for the other. What makes it so easy with Josie is that his creativity passing the ball now, dropping into like off the front line, dragging defenders with him and then releasing runners into space. We saw him do it a million times against Honduras. We saw him do it against Trinidad and Tobago. We saw him do it against Mexico back. So like I think he has 4 or 5 assists in World Cup qualifying already. So him being able to fill that role makes the 4-4-2 more viable or the 3-5-2 more viable. And that means Bruce can be a little bit clever with how he uses Pulisic as well. So to my mind, neither is a lock starter. The only one who is Pulisic. And then Bruce figuring out what's the best way to sort of unleash him in that given game.
Josie's a pretty injury-prone guy sometimes, too, so it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world that you have another forward.
That guy would yeah. say that.
But it's not the worst thing in the world to have other options to give him a rest. Not saying he gets hurt, saying like, yeah. Oh, Josie, you don't have to play
and I think,
every
look,
time.
I think there's a solid chunk of the fan base who would just say this conversation is wrong on the face of it, that if they're both healthy and you're only going to use one of them, Bobby Wood should be the guy.
Yeah.
So, and they're not, I can't say they're 1,000% wrong. So.
Kurt Larson would be very unhappy with you right now.
Okay, so... We have Tom Thresher in Connecticut sent us a long email, which I appreciated and enjoyed reading, about goalkeeping. But basically his question was, we're asking question marks about the U.S. national team goalkeeper pool, and where is Luis Robles? He's saying on a scattered and disorganized Red Bull team, he's been a good again once again this year. He's obviously been the Iron Man since he came into MLS. Should he be at Gold Cup right now?
Should he be?
Yeah.
I don't know if he should be, no.
Whoa.
I mean he Luis Robles is just he's a steady goalkeeper to me. He's never been a guy who should be on the international level, in my opinion.
Wow. Ben was very quick on that one.
Right.
And let's move on then.
Woof.
Glenn in Mannheim, who are the two most likely teams between the Philadelphia Union, New York Red Bulls, and Montreal to overtake Columbus and Orlando? Red Bull have the most points, but Montreal and Philly have 3 games in hand over Columbus. So one of these teams hypothetically would make that jump that you've said doesn't happen quite often.
So we're saying we're picking one team.
Yeah, of those 3.
Well, it's obvious. I mean, the Red Bulls is the only one that, like...
Well, actually, he said 2 most likely.
Oh, 2? Okay, 2. Let's do Red Bulls. Again, like, this is not going to happen because only one.
That sounds like a 100%.
Go read the article on MLS.com.
Bear guarantee.
Well, I mean, I know Doyle's going to say Philly because he thinks Philly's, like, the 3rd best team in the league. So I'll go with Montreal.
I think Philly's top 8 in the league.
So that means they make the playoffs.
I think Philly and New York have a pretty decent chance of surpassing Columbus and Orlando City. But who knows? I mean, if Greg Berhalter finally benches Jonathan Mensah, Columbus can start playing, you know, can start winning some games again. So
there's a guy named Lalas Abubakar.
He was very good in his first game. Alex Cronale has been pretty good, too.
If Abubakar plays 3 more games, he's already in the running for Rookie of the Year. So mm-hmm. I'd be back on track with
the Jack Elliott Award.
Yeah, it seems like it at this point. You gave it to Nick Lima a week into the season.
So Jonathan Mensah.
Sorry.
We played against him in the World Cup, did we not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did we not score like 6 goals?
Because Josie went down after 21 minutes and we sat back and conceded about 100 shots in that game. But John Anthony Brooks scored a goal. So
yeah,
I remember
that one.
It worked out well. Rapids Rabbi, he says, not fishing for a Rapids answer here. Which MLS West team has the best chance of a second half rebound with an impact transfer move?
Seattle. And I mean, Seattle's even on points with Vancouver in seventh place. I will be shocked if Seattle
playing two more games.
Yeah, but still, I will be shocked if they don't make the playoffs. They've 4-2-2 in their last eight games. Clint has kind of woken up, and I think they've looked a little more active. That there's going to be some big moves for them in the signing.
So, do you think Seattle and LA will make the playoffs?
Man, I kind of do.
So you're saying Vancouver and San Jose drop?
I think Houston drop.
Whoa!
Yeah, sorry.
I was waiting for that one. I was fishing for that one.
I think Houston drop, and I think one of Portland or San Jose drop.
Wow. So Vancouver is in.
I think Vancouver is in. I think Vancouver is – look, I understand that they were playing NYCFC and short rest for NYCFC on turf.
And they used Herrera.
Yeah, but, like, I haven't seen NYCFC get – played off the field like that, like Vancouver did in that second half, more than like once or twice all season. I put a lot of stock in that. And look, if you look at them on points per game, they're what, fourth in the West? Mm-hmm. But the
team that you're saying is dropping is above them. 1.47 as opposed to 1.41.
Yeah, but the Dynamo have only what, seven more home games left?
Can I just throw out there that one of my favorite things in MLS is watching Ben Sweat play left back and Nicholas Mosquito go up for headers against them? It's just fun to watch.
Ben Sweat, player of the month for NYC.
There you go. Also, one of the things we forgot, because you mentioned LA and you mentioned some other things, Kasuke Honda, training in USL with Orange County, out in LA, LAFC rumors. There's been Seattle rumors in the past. Is this a guy we see in Major League Soccer this season?
Not if he's with LAFC.
You think that's what it is?
So he goes, so he signs with LAFC, and then he gets loaned out to Orange County SC, dominates USL, or takes him to the title, comes to LAFC, like, all ready to go.
You know they're not going to win because Red Bull's going to turn it around.
It seems like with guys like this who, like, are, like, rumored for, like, a year, a year and a half, like, they, like, never come.
Right. I'm still waiting for George Weah to show up.
They end up at, like,
Timothy
Galatasaray or something, and then they never come.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm expecting.
But to me, he's training there for a reason. And look, LAFC are one of those teams that they're going to want to have a global brand.
But is
he a DP player in Major League Soccer right now?
I think so.
I mean, is he a big name? Is he a big name in the U.S. or is he like strictly like a Japan thing?
Big in Japan.
Yeah, I think he'd be a tough first signing because he's tough to build around. We talked about Guardado, his flexibility. Honda does not have that.
You have to play him as like that second striker.
Right, and you have to help him. Right, you have to put support around him. We'll see. Last one here.
Does Zlatan count as support? You start off with Zlatan and Cascade.
I think Atlanta has proven if you're going to start an expansion team, sign no defenders, as many attacking players as you can, score as many goals as you can, and have a lot of fireworks at your games. And it's fun. Austin Gordon, last question, and this goes into what I just said. Why has David Goss not been offered a technical director job with an MLS team?
Woo.
And I think right there is what I would do. If you brought me in, I bring the flair. Like, I'm going to get Balotelli. I'm going to bring Juan Sebastian Verón out of retirement. I'm going to put a team around probably bring Ronaldinho on the team. And look at that.
All right, well, let me see. Explain to us the difference between Gam and Tam.
Yeah, that's very easy to do. One starts with a T, one starts with a G.
You've got the job.
Well, that's all we have, folks. Extra Time Radio driven by Continental. Ben Bear, Matt Doyle, thanks for joining me. Andrew Wiebe will be back on Thursday. Unless someone, stops his plane so that I get to host again. Probably not. Clubbing Country after the whistle on Wednesday night. That will be following the U.S. national team game, which is 9 p.m. Eastern time on Fox Sports 1 Unimas, as well as TSN up in Canada. Canada back in action on Tuesday. Ben, was there last thing you want to say?
No, I think it's like Weeby's birthday coming up. So I just want to say, happy birthday, Weeby.
Yeah, I've been sitting at his desk today. Weeby has a calendar.
Happy 31st birthday.
It says, with a picture of himself, and it says, happy 31st birthday, that he stares at all day while he's sitting at his desk. That's bizarre, right? That's a little bit bizarre.
You got to love yourself before you can love other people. That's what Lizzo always says. That's how I live my life. Thanks so much for listening, everyone, and we'll talk to you next time.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.